This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
People of the internet, welcome to Modern Day Debate. I am your guest host, Kaz, and tonight we have T-Jump Crossing Swords with Leo Filius. We have 10 minutes of opening statements, followed by 60 minutes of open discussion, and 30 minutes of Q&A. Going first tonight is Leo Filius, and Leo Filius, if your first word, the floor is all yours.
I think he left. I think he ran away.
Sorry about that, everybody. My 90-year-old grandmother needed a quick favor. Family matters. It just took a few seconds. Had to go. Just had to take care of that really quick. I apologize, folks.
No problem. Hey, so there's your first word. You can have the floor for your opening statement.
Alrighty. Yeah. Hi, I'm Leo Filius. I should be linked in the description below, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. So, yeah.
Oh, just to clarify, like, your name is in the thing, Bilk Eel?
Oh, yeah. So that says Bilkeel Agrami. If you happen to know who Akhil Bilgrami is, you'll get it. If you don't, I'm sorry. Anyway, Marxism. Yeah, Marxism is an interesting subject. I have to be honest. I haven't seen T-Jump talk about specifically Marxism much. I have seen a few of his debates on socialism, but me personally, I think socialism is tangential to Marxism fundamentally. Not saying that he doesn't know what he's talking about, just I've never heard what he's had to say on this, so I won't make any statements about his beliefs or anything like that, because you know, I just don't have anything to work from. Marxism is reasonably complex. It's more of a philosophical and sociological analytic methodology more than it is anything. So what I'm going to try to do here is briefly summarize three of the prominent areas of at least Marxism as I hold to it, which would be orthodox Marxism. And those are dialectical materialism, the metaphysical framework, historical materialism, the historical analysis, and the labor theory of value, the economic analysis. So let me just jump right into this. Dialectical materialism was pioneered by Karl Marx, who was, in his early days, a young Hegelian. It is built off of a Hegelian philosophy, but Marx didn't really like the idealistic way, the idealism that Hegel used to look at the world. So he took the dialectic that Hegel developed, but he inserted it into what he would have called a materialistic framework. What dialectical materialism is it says that we should not look at the world as some static and unchanging entity that we build systems around, such that our systems don't ever change and are static and unchanging with the world. This is not going to be successful with humans. And the reason for that is because the world is not the universe. Reality is not a static and unchanging entity. You might think if you took any solid object that's sitting around you and you stared at it for 15 minutes, it's not going to look like it changes. But if you could look at it under a microscope or what have you, you would notice that there are a variety of wild changes occurring to the system that makes up that object. And this was an observation that Marx and then later Friedrich Engels, his closest colleague, developed, that the world is in a state of number one, the world is material, it's physical, and that's that. We shouldn't presume that there's anything else beyond it, because that just muddies the waters in terms of helping us understand reality and our place within it if we start to think that everything was designed specifically for us, when that obviously doesn't seem to be the case. So reality is fundamentally material. It is in a state of constant flux, and we should base our systems on this. That is a basis of what dialectical materialism is. This prescribes what Marx would have called historical materialism, which was more a historiological analysis of societies, where Marx said that the ways that societies develop is directly rooted in the development of their productive forces, which is something that is either promoted or either incentivized or potentially disincentivized by something Marx would have called class society. That class society is, when you consider the whole framework for how long humans have existed for, you know, at least a couple hundred thousand years, class society is very, very new in human society, and it is a result of the ways that humans have developed in terms of moving towards systems that allow humans to produce more than what any particular tribe or clan, what have you, would have needed. And this eventually led into the development of a class society, a society where there are classes of people that have different material conditions and prescribed by that different material interests, and that there is an antagonism between these classes as a result of different interests that they have being prescribed by a difference in the material conditions being like, do you have enough food? Do you have enough water? Your shelter, all of those kinds of things. And your material interests are the things that you seek. So most people are probably going to be concerned with pursuing, you know, a job and earning money so that they can put food on their table and pay their bills and get water and raise their kids. Those are their material interests. But then there's a class of people that don't have to worry about those things. They have the ability to have interests and pursue interests that go beyond that: art, science, technology, culture, what have you. And it was the movement towards a class society that afforded a particular class within society the ability to focus on those things that led to the cultural development of humans. And this is where Marx would say that class society, despite currently being something that is more detrimental to human society, at some point was beneficial to it. It's why we were capable of developing the technological advances and the cultural advances that we were. Going even further than that, he then started to take this and examine that within an economic framework, whereby he said that so many economists throughout history, including people like Adam Smith, David Ricardo, Fourier, many of these classical liberals, these classical political economists, they struggled to define what value was in an economy. Now, Adam Smith, along with other people, I think Robert Owen was one of them. I think David Ricardo spoke about it a little bit. I know Adam Smith mentioned it in The Wealth of Nations, but it wasn't the only one, was something called the labor theory of value. I think Adam Smith also introduced, I don't know if he was the first one to do it, but I believe he also introduced the subjective theory of value in The Wealth of Nations. But what Marx said was that value isn't some subjective thing. If that were the case, why is it that when I want to go buy a car, I can't buy it for $20,000 less than what it's being offered for? Because the value isn't subjective. What Marx would have said, and what somebody like myself, an orthodox Marxist, would say, is that value, the value of a product, is rooted in the amount of socially necessary labor, which is the amount of average labor. Because, I mean, if you got two people, one takes 3 hours to produce product X, the other one takes 6 hours to produce the exact same product, the average between those is going to be the socially necessary labor requisite to the production of a product. That's what value is to a Marxist. And this concept of value was proposed by Marx because he believed it helped to explain something that's known as long-run equilibrium prices, or the long-term prices around which the supply-demand curves tend to fluctuate. I would argue that there has been no other economic system that's been capable of predicting why there are long-run equilibrium prices, at least not as accurately as Marx had. So what I've said is very simplistic. Marxism is not a simplistic thing. I've tried to do my best in the time allotted. I don't really know how much time I've used or how much time I've had left. It's not really important to try to give a brief summary of orthodox Marxism, at least. I should say anything dealing with Leninism and Stalinism and Maoism or Castroism or anything like that, anarcho-communism, I'm not here to discuss that. I don't defend those. I don't advocate for those. I don't agree with those. Those aren't my positions. So for me personally, those are things that I just don't care about. Those aren't what I defend. They don't matter to me. So that's a brief summary of some various areas of Marxism, is at least as brief as I can get in the time allotted while trying to retain some of the technicalities. But for anybody that's hearing something and they have questions, you could throw them in the comment section. We'll get to them in the Q&A. Or I would recommend reading Marxist Theory, the three volumes of Capital, Socialism, Utopian and Scientific by Engels, The State and Revolution by Lenin. There's a variety of work out there for anybody who is genuinely curious, regardless of whether the questions they have are inquisitory or critical. And I guess I'll just leave it there.
All right, thank you so much, Leo. And we'll go ahead and kick it over to T-Jump for his opening statement. T-Jump, the floor is all yours.
Yeah, so I didn't really hear much about why we should adopt Marxism or why Marxism is good. The only thing he said was that it made predictions of long-term economic trends, which I don't know. I've never seen any successful predictions of the Marxist ideology. All of the economic studies that have been done, empirical studies, to try to confirm Marx's predictions have either come up ambiguous or negative. Like, there haven't been any like successful economic predictions that have been attributed to Marxism in economics or any other field, as far as I know. Most of them have been attributed to be false. So I don't really know what the point Leo is trying to argue for here. I don't know what exactly the positive claim he's making is, that we should adopt Marxism because why? What is the thing we're looking for here? But just to take a brief detour from that, hopefully we can talk about that in the Q&A. Marxism has a various number of criticisms, especially in academia, which include general criticisms of the lack of internal consistency. That's one of the big ones. The labor theory of value and the tendency for profit to decrease over time, those are inconsistent. They have a contradiction within them, which causes a problem. If your worldview is contradictory, well, then it's probably wrong. It kind of has to be wrong, is what contradiction means. There are a number of criticisms related to historical materialism, the type of historical determinism, necessity of suppression of individual rights that resulted with Marxist ideologies has a problem because it decreases a significant amount of potential for growth, incentives, technological growth, societal growth. There's issues with implementation of the economic policies that Marx advocated for. He said that socialism is going to be a necessary result in all capitalist economies. There's going to be a socialist revolution. That one's a false, obviously a false prediction. In fact, the opposite is the case. It's not the developing world that makes transitions into socialism. It's the underdeveloped world that makes transitions into socialism, and they are incredibly unsuccessful. All of the most successful economies in the world are mixed economies. Marx's prediction about what a successful economy would look like have all pretty much been wrong throughout all history. The only Marxist communist socialist governments are mostly like China, and that's only successful because of its size. The other Marxist governments are like Vietnam and Laos, which are not very successful. So if Marx was correct that this was a significantly more successful program, economic program, then we would expect that the most successful countries in the world would probably adopt it, which they haven't. So Marx's predictions about what would happen in these economies have been wrong. Also, his prediction about the decreasing rate of profit was wrong. Like, all the profits that have been measured based off of all the different standard criterias we use have been showing profits have been increasing, not decreasing. His understanding of machines was wrong, and how machines can actually create a surplus of profit in the same way a labor force can, even though there is a expenditure of resources, like you work for a day and you burn yourself out and you have no more energy. That doesn't have a net decrease for your overall value. You come into work the next day and you just keep doing it. Machines are the same way. And so their overall value doesn't decrease over time in the same way that Marx prescribed. His understanding of economics has just been essentially shown to be false in a number of ways. And I don't see any reason why we should adopt this policy or this economic principle that he espouses, especially because Leo mentioned Engels and Engels's laws or principles or whatever, which are all super vague platitudes. They don't really mean anything or tell us anything about economic, what we should do economically or what's going to happen economically. They're just vague little happy statements that you can interpret in whatever way you want. So I don't see any reason why we should adopt this as a principle to assess economic anything or to look at the world in any significant way. It's vague, it's self-contradictory. There are issues with this implementation. Like I said, trying to implement these kinds of economic suggestions usually lead to very bad outcomes. There's an absence of price signals, which causes a significant problem economically. There's reduced incentives, which causes significantly more problems. And empirical and epistemological problems are frequently identified, and it contradicts most of this research we have in economics. So I think just overall, it's been shown to be false, and there's no reason to adopt it in the current economic systems we have today in the mixed economies that we have are preferable. And if I was going to start a new country or whatever, it seems like I would be more rational to adopt the economic models that are used in the most successful countries, none of which use the Marxist model. So I don't see any reason why we should take this seriously.
All right. Thank you so much, T-Jump. And before we kick it into the open discussion, I want to let you know, folks, especially if it's your first time here with us at Modern Day Debate, that we are a neutral platform hosting debates on science, religion, and politics. And we want you to feel welcome no matter what walk of life you're from. And if you have a question or comment from one of tonight's debaters, fire into the old live chat and be sure to tag me at Modern Day Debate. Super chats go to the top of the list. All that we ask is that you please keep it civil, attack the argument and not the person, as insults will not be read. And that goes for the general discourse and the live chat as well. Our invaluable moderators are working tirelessly to elevate the conversation. So please show them, the debaters, and each other, and show them, each other, and the moderators the respect that they deserve by not attacking each other and hurling insults. Our guests are linked in the description below, whether you're listening on YouTube or via the podcast, so please check them out if you like what you're hearing. And hit the subscribe button, please, because we have plenty more live debates coming your way you don't want to miss. And with that, we will go ahead and kick it into the open discussion for our interlocutors. Their first word, whenever they're ready.
Yeah, man, I'd love to hear, like, again, I didn't really understand from his opening what the goal of his position is. What specifically about Marxism are you advocating for?
I guess I don't understand the question. So Marxism doesn't prescribe things for us to do. It's just an analytic methodology.
No, I'm asking you, like, what is your prescription? Like, is your position in the debate?
I don't have one. I just take it as an analytic methodology, and I agree with the analysis that it provides.
No, I mean, like, are you saying that we should adopt the Marxist analysis over this other analysis because something?
Oh, because I think it's more accurate.
Why?
Because I think that the things that Marx said have largely been shown to be true.
Examples.
You said the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. You do know that has been acknowledged by a large portion of neoclassical political economists, right? Many of them have actually tried to explain.
So studies, like, there's been a number of studies from the 1970s onward and previously. All the data is inconclusive. There's no actual support in this. There's no consensus on the topic. Much of it is mixed. Much of it shows that there's no results. I can just give you a reference right here.
I'd love to see that.
Even trim off profit rates in developed capitalist economics and time and series, Munich, 2018 report, mixed results, and argue that the answer is not yet certain due to conflicting findings and the issue of appropriate measuring the TRPF. That's just one of them. Here's one from, these are big names that I can't pronounce, from 2011, Thermostiskless Cogger something, technological in development, a long run profit rates dynamic in the US manufacturing sector. There's a Marcello Resendi one. Profit rate in the U.S. 1949 to 2007. These are all studies. Oscar Giorda. These are all studies analyzing this exact thing and whether or not Marx's principle was correct or not. There is no accepted findings here. Just not the case.
Well, yeah, in those studies, but like I didn't say that all economists acknowledge it. Just that a lot of them do acknowledge the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. There's many that, like you're showing, try to explain that away. I'm not surprised. They're neoclassical political economists. Their job is to defend the status quo. So I would expect that they're probably going to try to argue away the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. I just don't think they're successful in it.
Well, I'm making more of like a climate change argument. There are a lot of scientists who reject climate change. They're just the minority. They're not the consensus. The consensus is that this hasn't been shown to be successful, and it's a huge consensus. It's not like a small consensus. So saying that there are a lot of some of the economists who grant this is like saying there's a lot of scientists who reject climate change. That's nice, but what I care about, what's relevant to science, is what is the consensus in the field? I mean, do you think the consensus in the field supports this principle?
I don't really know. I guess I would liken it not to climate change, but more to like quantum foundations, where amongst professionals talking about it, there's quite a bit of a split as to Copenhagen versus Everettian versus relational. I would look at it something more like that. I don't think economics is really as a field rooted as solidly as in empirical data as like physics or chemistry or biology is, as a result of the sociological underpinnings of what economies are.
Sort of, but I'd say that, I mean, there's definitely a lot of empirical underpinnings in economics, but
sure.
Why, if we're comparing countries, how many countries accept this and how many countries reject it and use the more classical economic model?
Well, I don't think that the acceptance or rejection of models by countries bears on the merits of those models.
I do. Like, if you have a model that is significantly more successful or does something better, then any country who would adopt that model would have an advantage in some case. And so it's more likely that it would be adopted by other countries. So the fact that it's not accepted by most countries is a good indicator that it's not a model that many countries have confidence in, and they have confidence in a different model that has been very successful for them. So it's a pretty good argument that if you are proposing some kind of a model, either an economic model or a political model, if that model is actually more successful to some reasonable degree, then we would see people who adopt that model equally be more successful to a reasonable degree, and we just don't see that.
I guess I just don't agree that countries not adopting a model means that it must not be successful or that it's more likely to be unsuccessful. To me, that comes off as more of an argumentum ad populum that, well, an idea, if some idea is more popular and used by more people or believed by more people, then that's an indication that that idea is probably more accurate than another. I just don't see a good argument for why I should think neoclassical political economics is as more meaningful than a Marxist political economic analysis.
In theory, like if it's never been tested, sure. Like if you just come up with a new idea and say, well, no one's ever tested this, well, then we can't know one way or the other. But this has been tested. There's lots of people who have adopted this model and they don't have any discernible advantage economically from adopting.
Who's adopted a Marxist model?
China, Laos, Vietnam.
In what way has, in virtue of what is China Marxist?
The basis of their economy, they're communist Marxists. That's like,
they don't have billionaires in China. Jack Ma's a billionaire. They don't have private capital accumulation and a private ownership of the means of production in China. Yes, they do. You can start your own business in China. Now, sure, they have more, you know, regulatory capture and there's more, you know, government regulation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the means of production in China aren't privately owned and controlled and that a capital accumulation isn't private. It certainly is.
I thought we were talking about just the philosophy, like using the philosophy to analyze systems by comparing societal growth to different kinds of class systems. Like they do that. They don't listen to all the social communist stuff that Marxism says, but I thought that was a different topic. I thought we were just talking about
socialism and communism are prescribed at least right. In some sense by Marxism, but I don't know what it is that China's doing that's Marxist.
Well, they're using the epistemology that you're presenting, the economic theory that you're presenting to analyze systems. So they're using the Marxist system to evaluate different economies and saying, using this class structure model to test or evaluate different economic systems. So they're using the thing you're talking about in the way that they analyze economics.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand what you mean. I don't know what China's using that would be explicitly Marxist. It seems that China is just another largely imperialist nation. Like, I would say even more so than the United States, just operating under the status quo, the neoclassical political economic model that's dominated the planet for the last roughly 270 years, 300
Well, they
years.
Use like historical materialism and dialectic materialism as a basis to assess economies, like saying they use those things. Like America doesn't use those things. They don't care about them at all. Most of them,
I agree with that. Don't. I guess... sure, I guess I could grant that China might use those. I don't see why that would be important. It doesn't seem that much is turning on their use of that, I would say.
Well, that's what I was confused about your opening, because you seem to be prescribing the epistemology of Marxism and separating that from its implementation as two different...
Well, I would. But Marx and Engels never laid out how to implement socialism or communism, because they broke from the utopian socialists. They didn't think that socialism or communism was a thing that, well, if everybody just kind of held hands and sung kumbaya, we'd get there. They saw them as inevitable results of the revolutionary development of a human society. Marxism doesn't prescribe what we should do. It's just a way of analyzing largely, well, in Marxist time, classical political economy, but today more neo. Classical.
Right. So people who use that system to analyze economies are like China, Laos, Vietnam. They use the system that you're prescribing to analyze economies. They may not try to direct themselves towards what Marx would have directed themselves, but they do use that epistemology to assess things. Now, if you're right that that epistemology is more accurate and answers problems that others don't, then those countries should have some kind of an economic advantage. They should get something right that other countries aren't getting right. They should know something or solve something that the other countries aren't getting right, which would give them an advantage. But I don't see that happening. So all of the countries that are adopting the Marxist epistemology that you're talking about, whether or not they actually implement it, don't seem to have any greater knowledge or insight into economics than anybody else.
Well, yeah, but I can grant that they're using a Marxist mode of analysis. I don't really think that they are, but I can just grant that I don't think much turns on that. Sure, that nothing is changing. They're just not acting on it. It would be like me setting my hand on a stovetop, recognizing that my hand is getting burned, but just refusing to lift my hand off of it. They're just refusing to act. I don't see how that would bear on the validity. I don't think that's the right word I want to use. The merits, rather, of a Marxist analysis.
Okay, so could you tell me what prescriptions you would say that a Marxist analysis would give us that they should be doing but aren't?
I don't think a Marxist analysis really prescribes much.
What you just said before.
Well, I think that what Marxism is, like I said, an analytic methodology, and that what Marx and Engels discovered is that if we're taking this method that we use, what we'll discover is that there are intrinsic aspects of the development of human society, and that what Marx and Engels called socialism and then later communism were intrinsic aspects. They weren't something we can do to society to make it better. Marx would not have said, this is what you need to do to make socialism or to make Marxism be a thing in the world. He wouldn't have said that, because that wasn't the goal of what he was laying out. The goal of what he was laying out was a critique and an analysis of classical political economy under a capitalist mode of production. And all I'm saying is that I think that many of the statements made by that analytic methodology are accurate.
Okay, so I need like a concrete example. So let's say...
I would say the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. I think the fact that many, not necessarily all or most, but many, even neoclassical political economists have recognized this and have tried to explain it away, shows that the tendency of the rate of profit to fall is a thing that happens in the world, and that the neoclassicals are just trying to find a way to explain it away to protect the status quo.
It's false. Like I have the study. I literally just closed them.
Yeah, but there's studies on it. But I would have to read them. Like, I don't know what they say.
So which one? Tendency of rate and profit to fall. From time to time, research units of banks and government departments procedure studies the rates of profitability in various sectors of industry. 88, for example. Pauley S. Anderson, profit shares, investment, and out bankers. There's just a list of things. The National Statistics Office of Britain now released company profitability statistics every quarter, showing increasing profits.
So you're saying that because corporate profits are going up, therefore the tendency of the rate of profit to fall is false?
Sort of. So this study is specifically analyzing that principle. This was just on the first empirical tests of the labor theory of value. Tendency of the rate of profit to fall. It's just the wiki of the tendency of rate of profit to fall. This was studies done specifically on this to see if it was the case, and they found contradicting results.
I think if you're talking about the wiki, because I have looked at the Wikipedia page on it. I mean, everybody's looked at the Wikipedia page on everything anyway. Obviously, I'm being facetious, but
everyone has seen every Wikipedia of everything. Yeah.
100%. I've read every Wikipedia page on everything ever. But I guess what I would say is that I think what they're trying to do. Because Marx was quite careful here. He said that the tendency of the rate of profit to fall is not a law. It doesn't occur universally across the board. There are ways that a capitalist can mitigate that problem. It's a tendency, not a law. It's just that, yeah, a capitalist might be able to mitigate it for 6, 8, 10, 12 years. But
300
the
years.
Profit is, well, I would think there's numerous points in history we explicitly see. I think that's what's happening now. I think that's part of the reason we're seeing the inflation that we're seeing is because corporations are artificially inflating prices to combat the fact that people aren't purchasing as much products, and their ability to generate a profit on those products quarter over quarter, year over year, whatever, is trending downward. So what are they going to do? They're going to try to find ways to mitigate create that, because obviously the profit incentive is maybe not the only, but certainly one of the primary incentives for operation under a capitalist mode of production. They're going to, if it were true, I just want you to bear with me here. If it were true that the tendency to generate profit year over year goes down, don't you think that capitalists would probably try to find ways to mitigate that if they could?
Sure, that would obviously.
Do you think that they would be reasonably successful in potentially mitigating that problem?
Mitigating the problem, yes, but that just means decreasing the rate at which it goes down. So it would go down slower, but
or there could be
they're like reversing the problem
and goes back down.
Right.
You can reverse the process, but only temporarily.
But you can't reverse a process like tens and tens of 20 of times over and just keep reversing the process for hundreds of years and have it still work. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that's largely the reason why societally we're facing many of the problems that we are.
Well, that's literally just the past, like the entire past 300 years of just every capitalist country has been nothing but the opposite of that.
I guess in virtue of what?
Economic growth, technological growth, machine growth, worker growth, even though wages are stagnant. And
you don't think public funding had anything to do with any of that?
Sure it did. What is
I would argue that public funding probably had more to do with a lot of technological developments, the internet, nuclear energy. Well, but when you're investing public funds, there isn't really a need to make a profit. So if not necessarily all, I can just grant that it isn't all, but a lot of our technological developments are the result of public funding, then there isn't any profit to be made, so it can't drop. There isn't a rate of profit at all there.
But it's growing. That's the point. So all it's growing. The rate of profit is growing.
Well, profitability and the rate of profit are not the same thing.
Sure.
So profitability can go up, but the rate of profit can still be trending downward over the long run.
Well, it can still go up too, yes.
Well, yeah, I think that it has gone up because capitalists attempt to mitigate this problem, inflating prices, things like outsourcing jobs, cutting back on wage, ways of reducing things like variable capital.
What does mitigate mean?
Reduce the effects of or temporarily negate the effects of some
right.
problem.
So if it's going up, that's not mitigation, that's magnification.
It could be. I mean, if it's going up, but it was going down before, and then it goes down after, you wouldn't call the in-between more probably just a mitigation of a problem?
At some point, yeah, over small periods of time, if it goes up over just like a quick shoot and then just crashes or something, yeah, that would be a great example of mitigation. If it consistently goes up for hundreds of years, you can't call that a mitigation anymore. That's just...
I don't think profits have increased over hundreds of years. I think that there's been, I guess over the long run, I think that you could say that they have, but I think that that's been a rise and then a fall and then a rise and then a fall because
I'd say like any graph, there's ups and downs, but the trend is what's important. What is the trend?
Well, but the thing is that I guess under the labor theory value, we're not really looking at like trends per se. What's being analyzed here is what happens when capitalists seek profits. They end up losing the ability to generate profits, mitigate those problems, or potentially invest in other industries. Their profit, their ability to make a profit goes back up, but then that either stagnates and levels out, or it begins and usually begins to dry. I think that there's examples of this in history. I would argue that the 1929 economic collapse was a result of this, the 2008 economic collapse. I would argue that this is what causes economic bubbles. Profit seeking, resulting in an oversaturation of commodities in a market such that people just stop buying them and you're not selling anything. What's going to happen? You're not going to make any money. The bubble's going to burst and the ability to generate profit and the value are just going to plummet. That's actually exactly what happened in 2008 when the housing bubble burst.
No, it's because people overbought houses. They kept buying houses more.
Why did they overbuy houses?
Because they were given loans. Everyone was given a loan.
Exactly. Why do you think that the banks did that? Do you think that they were trying to increase their rate of profit on the loans that they were giving out, knowing that if they gave out more loans and gave more lucrative loans to people, they would be able to generate more profit off of people taking those loans?
It was loopholes because they were giving them to people who couldn't pay the loans, and that's what caused the bubble.
Yeah, but why do you think they were doing that? Why were they giving loans to people that they couldn't afford them? Do you think
they had to make money? The banks weren't. The intermediaries were. The intermediaries were making profit off of it, and then breaking the law and giving them to people who literally didn't qualify because they were giving
The banks are the intermediaries.
No. There's like people who can sell loans to people and sell houses to people as a
they do that
intermediary.
Through Yeah, but they do that through banks, through financial
institutions. So it's, but again, it's not the banks. There is a group of people who were money illegally comes offering from the bank. Yes, illegally, because they are illegally giving money's information. Lost, the
bank is losing money.
No, again, so this was not the bank giving out money. This was people illegally offering certain rates to people who couldn't qualify for those rates. And because of that, which the banks didn't know about, banks were not at fault here. They were, that seemed like good loans to the banks when they weren't. And so the banks paid them out because it seemed like good loans when they weren't. So it wasn't, the banks weren't the primary cause there. It was, there's a bunch of legal.
I don't know who these intermediaries were be if they weren't themselves.
Watch the Big Short.
Institutions.
But,
I don't but, watch movies to get my economic information.
They have lots of great papers referenced in there. So it's just like, it's just fine. So like, I think one of the greatest critiques of Marx was from Karl Popper. I like you. I'm good philosopher guy. He said historical materialism was a very scientific theory. It made predictions. The predictions were proven false. And then a bunch of ad hoc nonsense get added in to try and make it unfalsifiable. It was a falsified theory. And that's kind of what I think we're seeing here. So because of the ambiguity of Marxism, it says, the rate of profit will fall except when it doesn't, except when the capitalists, like, just, they avoid it. They use evasion tactics to make
it. Well, unironically, yes, the capitalist will find ways to mitigate his loss of profits. I like, honestly, teach him. I think you would agree with that. If it were the case that the capitalists were losing profits, which is granted that doesn't actually happen in the real world. If it were to happen, you really don't think a capitalist.
Well, no. The point here is your principle. If the capitalists were not doing anything to mitigate it and the profits were just going up, your principle would say, oh, they're just mitigating it. You don't have a way to differentiate whether it's actually working or whether or not you have this ad hoc principle. Oh, you do?
Yes. If profits were going up, but we could see that capitalists aren't, you know, doing anything to adjust value or differences, ratios between constant and variable capital, because that's ultimately where the tendency of the rate of profit fall comes from. The capitalist is trying to reduce the amount of variable capital necessary to the production of goods, because that's under the labor theory of value where value is rooted in. It's rooted in the variable capital. But if the value of a product is rooted in variable capital and variable capital is going down, then the value of the product is also going to drop. So what you would see is that over long periods of time, you're going to see this, you're just going to see these consistent dips in the rate of profit, and then attempts by the capitalist to mitigate that result of things like outsourcing jobs, reducing wages,
go back. The question was, The question was, is how do you differentiate whether it's actually going up and you're just making stuff up to try and make it fit your model versus it's really going down and you're just saying capitalists are doing
whether it fits with a Marxist framework. If profits were going up but capitalists weren't like necessarily doing anything to mitigate that, like, we know what kinds of practices capitalists engage in when they try to mitigate a loss of profits. I've already named some. They outsource jobs, they reduce wages, they reduce hours, they lobby for lower tax rates, they do all of these things to increase the amount of profit that the company develops. Yeah. So if they were developing profit, but none of those things were happening, then we would say, oh, well, then yeah, the tendency of the rate of profit to fall is false. But I don't think there's a place where you can show me this where Bitcoin. they're not also lobbying for tax breaks, where they're not Bitcoin. Also outsourcing jobs. Bitcoin. All of the, what's happening with Bitcoin right now?
Yes, it's going
crashing,
down. But
why is that happening?
Wait. They didn't do any of the things you listed, and they made a shit ton of
profits.
Also,
Bitcoin isn't rooted in labor, so it doesn't really have value under the labor theory of value. So I don't see why it would even be relevant.
Value increased, so it has no value.
Yeah, but it doesn't have value to the labor. So under your definition of value, it might have value.
Yes.
But then you're just not using the labor theory of value's definition.
Yes, because the labor theory of value
is
wrong.
How does the labor theory of value define value?
The amount of work required in a society to produce some good or something along those lines.
Yeah. So how much work do you need to do to make one Bitcoin? What are you doing? Yeah. So you're not actually really doing anything. You're not like taking some natural resource and turning it into a product, are you?
Yes. Correct.
So then you're not adding value.
From your theory,
yes. Exactly. But if you're going to criticize if you're going to criticize the labor theory of value, you should probably do that by using its definition of value.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, is that that definition of value is wrong because there's other kinds of value. There's other kinds of value.
There being other kinds of value, there's other versions of how life evolved. That doesn't mean evolution is false, because there's other ways to describe it, like creationism, which doesn't really describe it, but I think you get the point.
No, I don't get the point.
Okay, so there being other ways to define value doesn't mean some particular way of defining it must be wrong.
No. So going back to, remember, you said labor theory of value states that the rate of profit is going to fall necessarily. But if there's other ways to
produce... No, not necessarily. It's a tendency, not a law.
Like, it has to, over time, fall, I think, is that the conclusion. Like
periods of time, we will see dips in the rate of profit, yes. And that will be a result of the oversaturation of commodities in a market and thereby a decrease in their value.
Can it go up indefinitely? Does it
have to go? No, absolutely not.
So the labor theory of value says it has to fall at some point, right?
Yes. Not that it has to.
But if there's other ways of generating value which will stop that from happening, then it won't fall.
Yeah, I guess. But that would just depend on what you meant by value. I don't think that you would be using value there the same way that an LTV would be using it.
Well, obviously, because they only count value as the labor thingy. And I'm saying, well, that's not the only kind of value. So the thing that we use to assess the labor theory of value is the products are being made by people, which is fine. And the rate of profit fall can be inflated by the other things that labor theory of value doesn't call value. So their value in every other economic sense and every other economy around the world says these other things are valuable too, and they raise the profits. They go up from these other things. And so this dip that we're seeing in labor theory value just doesn't happen because it doesn't incorporate these other things that are actually really valuable.
What do you mean by valuable? Because a Marxist would say that there might be things that are valuable but don't contain value because there's no socially necessary labor requisite to their direct production.
Well, so example, like using Bitcoin as a means to transfer wealth or to bypass securities and governments or to evade taxes. Like, there are lots of values to this system that people use it for, to make lots of money and do things which that can then be translated into real work. Even though the creation of a Bitcoin is pressing a button, so in the labor theory of value, it has zero value. It actually does. That zero value actually can then be translated into real work value outside of it, which is a mathematical problem in the theory of value, because it doesn't count this as anything. How's it a zero? And so since this system can produce something that can translate into real work, but it's not accounted for in the labor theory of value, it's a gigantic weakness in the theory.
What about Bitcoin can be translated into physical labor performed by a laborer, like in a plant or like a manufacturing
facility? Well, like if I can use it to evade taxes, that's work I've done, that money I'm getting.
I don't think you've expended. You haven't taken a physical natural resource and turned it into a useful tool. That's what labor is, though, to LTV.
I'm saying, like, I do work and I get paid money.
Labor.
So I do. Let's say I don't know. Pick berries or something, and some percent of that is taxed. And if I can use Bitcoin to avoid that taxes, that work that I've done I can use Bitcoin to save more of the work I've done.
Well, what you would be doing is using Bitcoin as a way of capturing more of the surplus value that would be the difference, the excess value between what you're paid and what you actually generate in terms of what you do. So if you pick berries and you're paid, say, $20 an hour, but in that same hour that you earn $20, you pick $100 worth of berries, that $80 is the excess, the surplus value. If you used Bitcoin to avoid tax loopholes to make let's say that in an hour you're actually earning $26, all you've done is just reduce the excess value between what you produce and what you earn. But I'm not understanding. Yeah, that fits. In the LTV, I guess I'm a little confused here.
If it's generating value, but you say it has no value, that doesn't fit. That's a contradiction.
What do you take value to be?
What do I take value to be? I have no
idea.
In
an economic sense, I should specify.
Anything that makes people's lives easier.
Yeah, that just wouldn't be what value is to somebody in the labor. I'm not even necessarily saying that what you said is like wrong, but that's just not.
Well, I know. I think But my whole argument here is that the labor theory value of the Marxist system is stupid, and it doesn't really account for value, and it doesn't really account for economics. It's not.
But it gives a very specified definition of value.
I know it does, but I think it's stupid. I think mine's better.
Well, in virtue of what?
It doesn't account for the things I mentioned. Like, my definition of value is anything that makes people's lives easier. I think that's a better definition of value, a better way to assess economic
growth. Why is it better?
It accounts for more things that seem to have value.
Like, what's a thing that it accounts for that LTV doesn't?
Bitcoin.
LTV can account for Bitcoin. There's just no value in it because there isn't any socially necessary labor required to produce it. So let me give an example. So let's take a pair of like the Gucci jeans that you've probably seen a picture of. They're like all ripped up in the front that like, at least we're like, I'm from a farmer would look at that and go, that is the most useless thing. Why would I spend $400 on a pair of already ripped up jeans? What? So that has a price. It's $400, if I remember from the meme. I think it was like four. Anyway, let's just say it's $400. Yeah, so it has a price, but there really isn't any like use value to that to the farmer. But nobody's going to say that there wasn't labor expended to produce that product. So it might not have a value in terms of a use to you, but that isn't to say, at least under the labor theory of value, that it has no value. So there can be things, there can be things that have value but no use in the LTV that can be accounted for, and there can be things that have use but have no value in the LTV that can be accounted for. The idea that the LTV doesn't account for things because of the description or the definition of value that it uses, I just don't think is a defensible objection.
Okay, let's go back to like, what do you think are the advantages of this model? What do you think it does better than
that? It provides an accurate analytic method or an accurate analysis of the development of human society and the reasons why it seems that our ability to develop into the future is being restricted. I would argue that that is being restricted as a result of the mode of production under which we live, and that the way that it is structured and what it's incentivized to do, the productive forces.
What productive forces are being restricted?
So just to give some examples, I think that there's absolutely no reason why humans couldn't be utilizing largely nuclear energy to power everything. The reason that's not being done is because there's no incentive to transition to that by the capitalists who own all of the capital and the resources that would be requisite to a transition, because they can already make billions of dollars just continuing to do what they do. So they have no incentive to continue to advance the technologies that we have, implement them in society to make our societies more efficient and more sustainable. That's just one example.
Well, it's false. The reason nuclear isn't adopted is because people are afraid of it and they voted out.
I disagree. That any Marxist would disagree, because the development of society isn't rooted in ideas. That was the primary criticism that Marx had with Hegel, is that idealism doesn't work. We have to be realists about this. It isn't whether things accord or disaccord with our ideas that drive society forward. It's the antagonism between the classes as a result of the restriction of the development of the productive forces.
Okay, well, that's very, very easy to disprove. Religion. You're an atheist, right? We're both atheists. We don't believe in God's sky daddies. But God's sky daddy had a really big impact on people's societal development, didn't it?
Absolutely.
So doesn't that prove Marxism wrong there?
I guess I would need you to walk me through that. I'm really not.
You said that the growth of society isn't based on the ideas, it's based on labor theory or whatever. And I'm saying, no, the ideas actually do have a significant impact. People believing in a magical sky daddy who isn't going to flood the world again has a big impact on, say, climate change. And so the ideas people have a profound impact on
society. Oh, I agree. I should clarify. I wasn't saying that ideas like don't mean anything. It's that a religious person might have a set of ideas based on their religion, but at the end of the day, they're going to engage in the things that meet the material conditions they need to continue to survive, regardless of honestly whether that aligns with their religion or not. And I think T-Jump, correct me if I'm wrong, that you would probably agree with that. That's what it's saying. It's not that there aren't ideas don't matter to us, but that at the end of the day, the ideas that I have aren't what's driving me to do what I do. My need to meet the material conditions that I live under, finding food, finding water. I mean, obviously that those terms.
Global warming.
What about
opposite? So people who are going against the material needs. We have a material need to save the planet and not burn to death. they have a bunch of religious SkyDaddy beliefs that don't.
In virtue of what is that our material need? Most people would be more concerned with putting food on their table than they would be voting for the right people to change. Like, I mean, you're right when you say that, like, there's a lot of this stuff most people just really don't care about, but that's part of the point is that the ways people, like, I think that we should, and I would imagine you probably too, that this is a problem we should address. We need to address climate change. We need to start. But how many, like, protests have you been at for that? How many politicians have you sat down with? I'm not saying that you haven't done that, but if I had to guess, that's probably going to be minimal compared to you doing other things that bring you an income in whatever way so that you can meet your material conditions. Yeah, I mean, you do what you do on YouTube, but what I'm talking about is, like going to Washington and talking to the politicians. Most people, like me and you and others who desperately want change to be made, we're not doing those things because they're not going to immediately satisfy the material conditions under which we live. That's what Marx meant when he said ideas don't matter, is that ideas matter to people, but not to the development of society. People don't act always based on...
So I'm lost. I'm losing the connection here between ideas and don't help with the development of society and what you mean by development of society. Because when I think development of society, I think electricity, light bulbs, Faraday, literally nothing but ideas, quantum mechanics, spacecraft, space travel, ideas and nothing but ideas, the cotton mill, ideas, I think nothing but ideas.
Do you think scientists would have developed ideas because they thought it was cool or because they're scientists and they're paid to do it and they need the money to continue to live?
Both.
Yeah, but which one do you think would be more rudimentary, if either?
I have no idea. I mean, I've read studies of both.
I would say that scientists further develop science, not because, well, this idea is cool. Let's see what other people think. I mean, at the end of the day, that's probably what they're going to say, but they're doing it because they're paid to do it.
Most notable scientists throughout history were not paid and did this specifically just because they thought it was cool. Ludwig Boltzmann invented the atom. He never got credit for it. He committed suicide, got no credit for it at all, got no pay for it. Made one of the greatest discoveries of all mankind. So there are many, many mathematicians, many, many scientists where that happens all the time. Women scientists, especially in history, do it just because it's cool. They're never going to get any credit for it. So yeah. I don't know the numbers on that, but yes, they do both.
Okay. That bears on Marxism in a negative way. How?
I have no idea. You just asked the question, like, do I think the scientists do it for money or they do it because it's cool? And I think both.
Well, yeah, I just don't see how that would bear on my boat. Yeah,
you asked the question. I have no idea.
No, I'm just saying that's a fine answer. Like, there's nothing wrong with your answer. I just don't see how that answer would bear on Marxism.
See how the question bears on Marxism.
What I'm trying to say is people act in ways that bring them the things that they need. The most immediately, people are going to do what they need to do to survive. If the things that you need to survive, you don't have to actively go out and seek and do things to get, then you're free to pursue other things. For most of history, the people that developed science and math and technology and art were wealthy people. They were aristocrats. They were the people that were learned, that could read, that could write, that had money, because they had that free time to pursue those ideals. The serfs didn't. And I'm sure you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you would agree with me that there were probably a lot of other people that were speaking somewhat like metaphorically here, like Einsteins or what have you out there, but nobody ever heard of them because they didn't have the ability to really share their ideas and develop them because they didn't have the time because they were focused with meeting their needs.
Sure. But every single economic model says that. Why is this special to Marxism?
Well, every economic model says that, including Marxism. That wouldn't necessarily be a point against Marxism. Marxism would say that that's going to be an intrinsic part of any model. It's just that we should have models that afford as many people as we can the ability to actually pursue the things that they would like to do rather than being forced to work for somebody else to make ends meet to continue to exist.
Sure. And pretty much every economic model says that also. So I'm not seeing how this
I don't see how capitalism says that.
Yeah, it does. Capitalism would say we should, if we have the means to do so, give everyone the means to do that in order to expand.
What does capitalism do to bring that to fruition?
We don't have enough resources. So it does do
things. I disagree. See, I just disagree with that.
What?
We produce enough food to feed 10 billion people globally. There's 8 billion people on the planet. Globally, we waste a third of the food that we produce.
Actually, we wouldn't be able to do that because to be able to transfer the food would cost more and it wouldn't be.
Yeah, we could definitely feed more. It only costs something under what kind of system? a profit incentivized system? Like if we lived under a system where it doesn't matter, the money value here isn't what matters. Don't you think that we would have more of an incentive to deliver food to people, because we're not concerned with whether we're going to make money on it? We're doing it because that's what we should do.
That's not what I mean by cost. By cost, I mean the amount of technology and work that has to be put into something to get food from like arable countries like America to Africa or whatever.
You don't think you have the logistics to get food to like at least so the, like this is kind
quantity
of, hard.
Of food.
Literally every single individual, I think that but like if we could reduce what is global hunger right now, like 16% or something like that. It's sure. somewhere around like 20%. I think somewhere if sure. that was reduced to like below 5%, you're saying we don't have the logistics to do that?
No.
I just disagree. We have the logistics to take people out with lasers on drones that are thousands of feet in the air in the most remotest places in the world. Like I don't understand.
Lasers cannot do that. They cannot do that. Yeah, they can. Lasers can direct rockets. They can't bore people.
But that's
out.
What I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I just don't understand.
So that was one of the criticisms I brought up earlier.
Technological advancement. I just disagree.
That was one of the criticisms I brought up earlier, is the implementation of this kind of system. It decreases it has a lot of problems. When you try to implement this system, it never, ever works. That's why we've never seen it
work. Well, under the ways in which it's attempted to be implemented, I can just disagree with those, though. I don't think that bears on the merits of Marxism, because Marxism doesn't describe a mode of implementation. That's left up to the person. I can agree that everybody thus far who's tried to implement it didn't do it very well.
Okay, so if we have no past evidence of this model being successfully implemented, we should accept it because why?
Because those past attempts at implementing it don't bear on the merits of the model itself, because the model doesn't prescribe a way to implement it. It's like saying there's this cool idea. It doesn't tell you how we should put it into practice in the world, but this is how I think we should do it, and we should kill millions of people to do it. I could just disagree with that, but I don't think that bears on the merits of the model, because that person said this is what we ought to do to implement it. That's what they thought, not what Marx thought.
Well, so like if I'm running a country and I'm trying to pick whatever epistemic model I want to use to try to assess how I should run this country, and I have one model that has a bunch of people who've tried it and all failed, and one model that a bunch of are literally running all of the richest, most powerful countries in the world who have the best economies, which should I pick?
I guess I'm not understanding the question. I wouldn't look at what model we should implement based necessarily on the ways that we should implement it. I would look at the merits of the model. But that depends on whether the model itself prescribes a method of implementation. Because if it doesn't, then no way in which you implement it is ever going to bear on the merits of the model, because the model doesn't prescribe a method of implementation. I think I would say that capitalism provides a mode of implementation.
Again, so the question here is, the whole point of the debate is you're making a positive claim Marxism is good, and I'm trying to say I'm running a country and you're saying you're promoting this system to me. Like I'm running the country and you're saying you should use this system, and I'm saying why? Like I have this very good system called capitalism or mixed economies. Capitalism on its own isn't good, so I agree with that. Mixed economies are the best. All the best countries in the world use mixed economies. They have the best results. They've had the best results for the past 1,000 years. These work really, really well. Why should I get rid of this extremely good model that has the least hunger, least death, least suffering, best health, best of everything in the world to adopt yours?
Well, I guess I would disagree that, like, under capitalism, we have the best healthcare and all that stuff. Obviously, not have the best healthcare, but it's got a more capitalist-based healthcare system than any other country on the planet. And out of the developed countries on the planet, but the worst health, or at least some of the worst healthcare outcomes prices.
So what I said,
I think it's tangential. There was something else you said I wanted. You said, I just want to make sure I heard you right. You said that you agree capitalism in and of itself isn't really that.
Yeah, like laissez-faire, super-capitalist anarchism is stupid.
Why?
Because it doesn't work as well. All the evidence shows mixed.
Why doesn't it work?
What? I'm just going off the empirical data. It just literally.
Well, yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just asking you to kind of explicate it. Why don't you think it works? Like, what is the data that you're reading say about why it doesn't work, I guess?
That's a different topic.
Well, but what I'm trying to get at is, it seems then that we're agreeing capitalism as a mode of production.
Yeah, yes, pure
doesn't work. Like it's a failure.
Yes, I agree. Pure unregulated anarcho-capitalist. Capitalism is
stupid.
Well,
that's just what capitalist, that's what Marx was criticizing, was a capitalist mode of production, which, I mean, we are technically still a capitalist mode of production. He would have also criticized nation-state regulating them.
There's a difference between just complete laissez-faire capitalism and mixed economies. So mixed economies, very, very successful. So mixed economies are like in the middle.
When you say mixed, can you break that open for me a little bit?
It's the technical term for what we call the current economic system in most Western countries that have like a mix of socialist policies and communist policies.
Countries have a socialist?
Socialist policies like welfare states.
I don't think a welfare state is socialist.
Mixed economy is the technical term. It's a technical term in economics for a mixture of certain kinds of capitalist policies and socialist policies.
I hear it literature, but I have to say I've never talked with a PhD economist that's used that term. They always say the term I use, neoclassical political economy. I'm not denying that mixed economy is a term. Obviously, it's a term. I don't know what you mean when you say mixed, because capital accumulation is still private and ownership of capital is still private. That's what capitalism is. Sure, our nation states regulate the system so that it runs a little bit more fairly. I think that's a point against capitalism. I'm not necessarily arguing against capitalism. I mean, I am, but I'm not. I'm defending Marxism. Marxism just criticizes capitalism. But I would say that's not necessarily a point in favor of specifically Marxism, but certainly a point against capitalism, that in order for it to operate properly, we have to regulate that system.
Well, so let me finish the statement this time. So mixed economies are in the middle. Capitalism is like the far right. Marxism, socialism is like the far left. And neither of the far right or the far left work. They both garbage every time they're implemented in extremes. They completely fail. But this part in the middle works really well. Everywhere
in virtue of
successful.
What? I mean, there's billions of people that go without the requisite food they need. There's billions of people that don't have clean water.
Which
there's
is billions still of more people than the extremes.
But I fail to see.
Name,
I don't think
name
that we've
a Marxist
ever
country
seen,
that exists that
there
has
is
less
no
starving
Marxist
people.
Country. I don't even know what that phrase means.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just don't know what that phrase means to say Marxist country. It would be like saying physics country.
That would be a beautiful country.
Physics is just a way of understanding something. That's all Marxism is an analytic method.
So like taking Marx's ideas to their extreme. Versus taking capitalism to its extreme.
But I don't advocate for that. I don't care about people who took Marx's ideas. Look, I'm sorry. I don't care about like Leninism or Stalinism or Maoism. I see those as bastardizations of Marxism that didn't really capture a lot of the strictures laid out by Marx or Engels. That's why I'm an orthodox Marxist and not a Leninist or a Stalinist or a Trotskyist or whatever.
This is why, like I brought up at the very beginning, it's completely unclear what you're advocating for. So say I'm running a country.
I'm not like advocating. I'm defending Marxism as an analytic methodology I think
that's
a successful method.
What you mean by those words is what's unclear. So say I'm running a country and you're going to bring this to me. What would I do with it if I accepted it?
I don't understand the question. I wouldn't use Marxism to tell you what to do, I guess. Marxism doesn't tell us what to do to make the world.
I'm asking a very much, much, much more basic question. So you're coming to me with some information and I'm supposed to accept this information and use it over some other information to do something, presumably.
So why should we use information X over information Y to describe what we do, whatever that may be? Is that kind of...
Sort of, yeah. I'm looking for a very, very basic trying to understand.
Well, I would just say information X gives us a more accurate understanding of the nature of human society than information Y.
Then what is information Y and why do you think
capitalist economics, like neoclassical political economics would be Y and Marxism would be X. I think Marxism provides a more meaningful and accurate description of the development of human society than neoclassicalism.
How?
Well, neoclassical political economics. Two questions.
One is how, and one is why does this matter? Let's say I accept this. What difference is this going to make in future? Like if I take this model over the capitalist model, what difference is it going to make in future?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to make a difference. I'm not saying that Marxism means we do something. All I'm saying is that Marxism is meaningful as an analysis. We can just use Marxism to analyze our political economic systems and then do nothing to change them. Marxism doesn't tell us what to change or how to change it or when it's going to change or why or where or anything like that. It's just a way of looking at something and describing how it works.
So the only thing you're advocating for is using the Marxist model to look at
The capitalist mode of production and derive to essentially, I'm sorry to interrupt, but to essentially, this is going to be somewhat flowery language, so forgive me, but to sort of derive the equations of motion of the capitalist mode of production.
Okay, I have no idea what that means.
To sort of examine that mode and say, given this understanding, this is how it's going to work, and thereby this is what we should see. And I would say largely that is what we have seen.
Okay, give me more of the examples of the things that we would expect to see under Marxism that wouldn't
rising inequality between the ownership class and the laborer class is another prediction.
Okay, who doesn't make that prediction?
I don't necessarily think that a capitalist mode of production would at least want to predict that.
I don't know of any system that doesn't predict that. I think every system literally predicts that.
I don't think capitalism
biology literally predicts that.
I don't, in virtue of what?
It's just the way the accumulation of resources work over time. Just entropy, literally entropy. That's literally
But I would disagree. I think up until about 8,000 to 10,000 years ago, human society didn't operate that way.
What?
Significantly more communal, obviously in a very barbaric and simplistic manner, but it was very tribal and clan related. It was based on communes.
Yes,
local communes
and
shared everything. Sure, that's fine, but that doesn't bear on the fact that
big
these were communes that
the
shared.
Clans.
Sure, but that doesn't bear on the fact that these were communes that shared their resources. They didn't have people that absorbed 90% of them. Well, you know, one person in a clan of 100 that absorbs 90% of the resources, but the rest, the other 99 are stuck with only 10%. This wasn't how it worked.
Right, but
sure,
the clans,
they warred and stole from each other. That's fine. Marxism doesn't say that didn't happen. It's not talking about the ways in which they fought with each other. It was talking about their structure.
Right. So, but the structure there would be the clans absorb 90% of the profits and the other clans.
But share them amongst all of the members,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Largely.
Sure. So you can say like a human body, my body, can accumulate 90% of the resources and I share it with the rest of the cells of my body. And that would be the same thing.
I don't think that it would be possible for one individual to accumulate 90% of the resources that a commune collected, because I don't know what it would mean to say that the commune collected these resources if only one person did.
So like when we say a commune collects 90% of the resources, the whole point of the conversation is pretty much every model predicts that one organism or group is going to take 90% of the resources.
How does capitalism predict that?
Everyone, it's literally just biology and entropy.
Yeah, but how? Like, where's the inference at?
What? I'm not following.
So how do we get from capitalism and therefore there is naturally going to be a level of inequality? Don't you think a system that's going to create inequality should be a system that we should probably say, hey, maybe we shouldn't do that?
That's literally physics. So like you're saying reality, we just shouldn't do reality.
I guess I'm not understanding that. I don't know what about physics says that societies are necessarily unequal. I don't think that's a physical or an empirical claim.
Like they're
it might be potentially empirical, but I don't think it's like physics.
There's no way to equally distribute all resources across all space and time exactly equally at all times. It's impossible. We can't do it.
Marxism doesn't say that.
Which means there's going to be inequality. So every system predicts
That's what Marxism says, is that under a capitalist mode of production, there is intrinsically going to be inequality because you have two classes of people.
All systems predict this.
I'm still not understanding how capitalism predicts this.
Because
I know it talks about
it. There's going to be a distribution of resources based on luck.
Why should resources be distributed based on luck?
Because of where you're born, your biology.
So if you're unlucky, you should just starve to death.
It's going to happen. So prediction doesn't mean it should happen. It's saying it's going to happen. So yes, capitalism predicts
analysis.
It's going to happen, that there is going to be separate groups of people: the smart ones, the dumb ones, the healthy ones, the unhealthy ones, the fast ones, the slow ones. Every model predicts there's going to be a distribution of groups.
Yeah, I don't think capitalism predicts this so much as it just being an intrinsic feature. I think it's a feature of capitalism, but I don't think capitalism said, if we implement this system, this is what's going to happen.
No, no, because capitalism starts, this is the way it already is.
Yeah, so it's not a prediction, it's just it's a feature.
No, it's a feature of reality, not capitalism. It's saying, so this is the way reality is, and we expect this to happen, and then we're going to implement this system to try to mitigate that.
I just disagree that that's like a feature of reality that can't be changed.
I have no idea how to even, like, do you think some people are going, there's a way to change that everyone is equally has the same intelligence and opportunities at 100% equal rate everywhere, no matter what? Is that possible?
No, I wouldn't defend that claim. I'm talking about material conditions, not things that you're born with.
Those are material conditions.
Your intelligence isn't a material condition, according to Marxism. Your material conditions would be the resources you have available to you to continue to live. The food, the water, the shelter. In the modern day and age, you could
And those are
like
also going to be different based on location. And you think those can all be equalized everywhere, all over the world, no matter what?
It would depend on what you mean by equalize. Otherwise, no.
Right, so there's going to have to be two classes. It's going to be some with less, some with
more. I don't think that there has to be. I think that there is. I just don't think it has to be that way. I think for majority of human history, it wasn't.
So you're saying it's possible to equalize this in perpetuity across the entire planet to make sure there's no more class distinctions?
Is it possible? Absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
Why? Why?
Because not all of the fresh water is in spread out enough to do that. Not all of the food, not all the air.
So you, yeah, when you have more than what you need, you share. That's a thing that could be done.
Yes. And it's still, which means to share means you're going to take the fresh fruit in one location and transport it for weeks to a different location. And the further you transport,
you think it
the
less
fresh it's going to get. Yes.
Like, we can go from a port in China to a port in the United States in like 10 days. Why would it take weeks?
Because then you have to put it in a truck and you have to drive it across like the entire land from different ports to like the edge of Africa. Like it takes weeks to go.
But why would they send it to a port in the United States to then be sent to Africa?
Oh my God.
I mean, that does happen under capitalism. And I would argue that's because they're seeking profit.
Any port, you can send it to any port. You're still going to have to drive it. And the driving is going to take a long time. There's lots of terrain, like mountainous terrain, which is very hard to get over.
Not understanding the objective. What is this?
It's going to take weeks to get resources from America with lots of arable land to places.
Well, that means we can't do it because it's
going to
take some time.
That means
there's going to
be a class difference. There's going to be a class difference between the people who have it right away.
How does that mean there's going to? So because it's going to take weeks to get resources places, therefore there's always going to be classes. I'm not understanding.
Congratulations.
That is not what class means in a Marxist framework. No.
Yeah, because Marxism is stupid. It doesn't recognize reality.
Yeah, but I don't think you've really given an argument for why Marxism is stupid.
I literally have explained just basic reality. No one's going to be equal. You're never going to get everyone to
be
equal.
Yeah, I just disagree with that. I don't think that that's necessarily true. Why should I think that's true?
Then I win the debate. Like, if you can't
think about reality, but saying that because you don't agree with me, I win the debate isn't telling me why I should agree with you.
If you don't agree with just obvious facts about reality,
yeah, but what makes it an obvious fact of reality? That's what I'm asking.
I literally just explained that.
Don't think that you did.
Then you're dumb. But
that's not really an objection to my argument. I'm not really hearing an objection. I don't know what it is that you think
further,
you destroyed.
I can't further explain basic facts about reality.
But you say they're basic facts, but then you can't tell me in virtue of what
they're
basic.
I literally did.
Okay, so then give me an example of what you said is a basic fact and in virtue of what.
No, you can't.
So then do it again because I'm not understanding.
Shut up.
I'm an idiot. Like you said, I'm an idiot and I'm stupid and I don't understand what you're saying.
Stop talking.
So can you do that?
I'm literally doing it. So
you guys want to go Q&A?
Yes.
We've got 3 minutes. I'd like to use all of them up.
No, I want to move to
Connecticut. Because I want to hear an objection.
So as I said before, you will never be able to balance all of the needs of life to everyone on the planet.
In virtue of what? Yeah, you've made that claim. Why should I think that claim is true?
Because more arable land is in one location than another. It's harder to get resources to one place
to another. Why does that mean that resources cannot be equitably distributed? In virtue of what?
Because it's harder to get to some place.
In virtue of what does it being harder mean it cannot be done? It was hard to put a person on the moon. T-Jump, you don't think we did that? Do you think it was easy to do that? Yeah, I don't understand. You're saying it's hard to do this, therefore it can't be done. That's not an argument. You're not giving me the inference.
If it's harder to give $1 to one person further away than it is to one person that's closer, then guess what's going to happen? The person who's closer is going to get it faster and easier and get to use it more.
Well, I think that depends on the system that you live under. Under capitalism, I would think that I would say
that. This is why Marxism dies and it fails in every country.
Yeah, you haven't really shown why that's the case.
Literally have. I literally just
showed. No, you haven't. Okay, then summarize. You can take the last 2 minutes and summarize
it. I'm good. I've explained it so clearly that everyone in the chat understands it. I'm ready to go.
I don't think so.
Nope. Okay. Well, I think then we'll just go ahead and move on to Q&A. Ladies and gentlemen, both of our
fast. Holy
well, time is relative when you're listening in. Ladies and gentlemen, both of our guests are linked in the description below. So if you like what you heard, if you're moved by what you heard, please check them out, whether you're listening on the podcast or on YouTube. So with that, I just want to say super chats do get priority. But if you do have a question for one of the tonight's debaters, you can tag me at Modern Day Debates. just want to say that insults will not be read. Anything that violates YouTube's TOS or hate speech, anything like that, those will be just skipped over or edited for charitability. Yeah. So I will go ahead and start reading the questions, but go ahead and send the super chats if you want. We don't have that many on the list right now. I'm going to go ahead and start the timer now. All right. First question from Bubblegum Gun for $2 says, at T-Jump, is the quantum field a particle? Yes or no?
No, but it is still physical. I debated him earlier, like today or yesterday or something.
Gotcha. From Neon Noir.
You're muted. You've muted.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was wondering why he was brief, but then you mentioned it. I was just, how do you get from Marxism to a quantum? What am I missing?
Yeah, he made the argument. I brought up quantum fields as an alternative to God, and he said, well, quantum fields aren't matter and they're not particles, so they can't be physical. And that was his argument.
Okay, gotcha. From Neon Noir says, why reject Lenin and Stalin when all they did was try to implement your ideas just because of the outcome?
No, I don't think they try. I don't think you get to tell me whether somebody tried to implement my ideas. I'm an orthodox Marxist, so I don't think they tried to implement my ideas. People like Trotsky and Lenin and Stalin, they were Marxians in the sense that they believed in a lot of what he said, but they believed that the way to implement it was through a vanguard party led by a strong leader who establishes a dictatorial state in favor of the proletariat. But Marx was very critical of nation states and did not believe that a nation state being utilized to bring about some like sort of revolution was going to be a successful thing, because a nation state is itself a hierarchical system. And Marx was very critical of hierarchical systems. So it's just, they weren't implementing my ideas or what I thought.
You want to respond to that, T-Jump? Speed up the clock a little bit. Okay. From Alan Green for $10 says, quote from Investopia, most of the blame for the subprime crisis is on the mortgage originators or the lenders, end quote. They consist of retail banks, mortgage bankers, and mortgage brokers.
It's the mortgage brokers. Those are the intermediaries.
This is another quote. Earlier. Sorry. These are two quotes back to back. Sorry.
Yeah, the mortgage brokers were the ones I was talking about, the intermediaries.
Anybody want to? That's it? Okay. From Mark Reed for $5 says, T-Jump, why do people need exactly the same resources? Wouldn't people that have access to an equal amount of resources be of the same class?
No, because if it takes like resources have to go from one location to another, and it takes weeks, the level of freshness goes down, for example, as one possibility. Electricity, when it goes over locations, it decreases in its potency of electricity. Distance and location have a huge impact on the quality of the goods that you're transporting. So if it takes longer to get quality of goods from one location to another, they're going to be lower quality. So there's going to be a class difference between the people who get the lower quality stuff and the people who get the higher quality of stuff where it's produced. Fish is an example.
Yeah, I would just say that I think that there could be resources produced in multiple countries. Africa is one that many countries like China, more so than the United States, unfortunately, are looking into, are making actually quite impressive investment into African countries. Africa could, because it has for thousands of years in the past, been a huge place for, I mean, okay, me personally, I would say that like Europe raped Africa for all its resources. Anyway, we grow pears in Argentina, but why couldn't we grow them in like the Democratic Republic of the Congo? This idea that like resources with Africa has a lot of arable land. Yes, absolutely.
Well, like there's just different countries have different amounts of arable land. America has the most.
Yes. So and I would say that I don't see why humans in socially speaking couldn't recognize how we need to produce things in different areas, but we can find ways to distribute that to all people in some equitable sense.
All right. Gotcha. One second. All right. From Bubblegum Gun for $2 says at T Jump, it has to be a particle for it to be physical.
You want to take that one, Leo? Go for it.
It's not even worth it. Look, dude, go learn about canonical quantization and what a quantum. I'm not even.
Okay. Sphincter of Doom for $5 says, the problem with Marx is the LTV, which cannot be reconciled with time preferences or marginal utility without becoming the STV.
I disagree. It takes a different definition of value, but its ability to account for certain aspects of like non-productive areas of an economy isn't like moot as a result of that. It's just that it explains them differently. Also, if the subjective theory of value were true, I should be able to go buy a brand new Ford F-150 for $35,000 if I want. But if I walk into the dealership and say that, they're going to look at you and go, the dude's going to go, fuck this guy. Because the value isn't subjective. I don't get to choose what I'm going to pay for what I buy. So then what is value if it isn't subjective? I think Marx does a good job of answering that question. And that's all I have.
My answer is better.
Gotcha. So that is the end of our Super Chats list, guys. So if you have a Super Chat up until the time that we run out of questions or the time runs out, those questions will go straight to the top of the list. And we will go on and move to the unpaid questions now.
I got a Super Chat on my end from Lawson Harrison. I can't wait for the communist revolution so that myself and 99% of the population can be artists, YouTubers, and philosophers.
Unironically, that would be totally based if people could actually live in a society that allowed them to pursue the things they'd actually like to pursue.
No involuntary impositions of will.
Well, I think his point is that most people wouldn't be doing anything productive, like McDonald's workers. No, none of them. No,
yeah, and
no
then McDonald's farmers. Wouldn't be a thing. Well, I definitely think farmers would be a thing because farmers is like the oldest job in human history that's existed before the concept of commodification and capitalism.
At a different rate, though. I think the rate and the amount of work would change significantly. So I think most jobs would probably go away. There probably wouldn't be most jobs, and most people wouldn't be able to work.
Because most jobs wouldn't exist. I think that we would just end up automating those jobs.
I don't think we can do that yet. I don't think we have the technological ability to do that yet. AGI, when it happens, I'm all for it, though.
Gotcha. Question from Gur Mania asks if I have a channel, and I did link that in the description below. So thank you for asking that question. And then the question
don't ever read anything from Gur Mania on this channel ever again. Just don't do it. Nah.
Well, I had to take the opportunity. I had to take the opportunity to plug my channel. So please subscribe to me. I need more subscribers. So just got to say that. From Ozzy, I don't know how to say this. Ozzy Zaba. Yeah. Okay. Is China failing?
Failing with respect to what standard?
Agreed.
I don't know what it means to say that somebody is failing simpliciter. Failure is given with respect to a standard, generally where the actions, behaviors, or outcomes are out of accord with the standard being taken as prescriptive of those actions or behavior. So if you're trying to go to the store, but then somebody comes and T-bones you and totals your car, and you don't ever make it to the store because you got to wait for the police and you got to write a report and it closes, then you failed, but only with respect to your standard, your desire to get to the store. So I don't know what it means to say that somebody is failing, but you attach no desire, no standard, or nothing to it. I don't know what that means.
I think it's definitely failed morally. They're definitely evil in a lot of ways, but economically they are doing well. They're doing very well. They're on the top of the countries of doing the most economically well.
Oxy Zabbix Zero. That's how I pronounce that name from now on. Question from Whoops says, why do we do new, better things? That's a quote from, I believe, one of you two. Why do we do new, better things? LOL, this dude just doesn't want to get it. Capitalists literally have no representatives but propaganda.
I don't know what that's... I'm sorry, it sounds like it might be more of a question for T-Jump. I should let him
answer. I think it's a criticism of T-Jump. They're saying the capitalists literally have no representatives but propaganda.
Why do we do new, better things? For lots of reasons. Money, efficiency... better quality of life because it's fun. Scientists do it because it's fun. There's lots of reasons, but again, all of history shows that mixed economies that are predominantly capitalist are better than pretty much everything else. So,
okay. Another question from Oxy Zabbix Zero for T-Jump says, how do you think fruits from around the world end up in his local supermarket? And why fruit farmers so impoverished if they are so close to such an in-demand resource?
Because we pay better. So like fish is a good example. Transporting fish means it's going to be less fresh and less tasty for everybody. It doesn't matter where you take it. So even here, I'm in Minnesota. If I'm trying to get like a lobster or something, it's going to be less fresh than if I get it in Maine. So there's going to be a class difference between the quality of the lobster I get versus the quality of the lobster you get in Maine. Same thing applies to fruits. Same thing applies to corn. Same thing applies to everything. So as you transport things, the longer and further it is away, the quality and the amount of energy it takes to get that to the location is going to decrease or increase relative to the stuff that you're sending, and its quality is going to decrease.
I guess I would just say that I think T-Jump is using class to mean something different than at least a Marxist would say, because a Marxist isn't going to say that class is given in terms of the quality of the material conditions or the material resources you have, but the quantity. So you could be somebody who only makes 35K a year living in Maine. And when you go out and buy lobster, it's going to be way fresher than, let's say, the Sukup family that lives here in Sukup or here in Iowa. If you've ever seen grain bids with the green Sukup, that's the family I'm talking about. But I don't think anybody would say that that means that Sukup is of a lower class than the, you know, making millions of dollars a year with a $100 million. Or your company under their ownership is of a lower class than somebody who makes 35K a year in Maine simply because they can get fresher lobster. It's not the quality of the material resources, it's the quantity.
Gotcha. We did get some more super chats in. Thank you so much, guys. Send in your super chats. We do have more time on the clock, and James needs the affirmation to be motivated to keep making more videos. So it's from Jay Grimes for $10 says, Agrami Marx was not critical of the nation state. For him, muted. It was necessary. What?
Agrami, his mic is muted. He said something. I saw his mouth move.
Well, no. I said Agrami Marx, and then he started to ring, and I realized, oh, he was saying at Agrami, and then after that was the start of the set.
I don't know what that means, at Agrami Marx. So,
he's saying, Leo, did you know that Marx... That's what he's saying. So Agrami is Leo. Did you know that Marx?
Why is Leo Agrami? I don't get it.
Because my display name on the screen is Bill Keel Agrami. I should have changed it to
Leo. I forgot about that last name. I remember the Bill Keel, but I don't remember the Agrami part. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Marx was not critical of the nation state. For him, it was a necessity of current political economy and would pass into history like past societies. He himself supported German nationalism.
He literally said, Marx didn't criticize nation states, but here's how he criticized nation as saying that they're requisite to the maintenance of the status quo under the systems that it is currently maintained, but that as we develop past that, the need for the nation state will disappear. Marx was certainly critical of the nation state. This is expressed in his drafts of Civil War in France, as well as, I believe, it's either his second or his first or his second volume of Capital, I can't remember, because I've totally read all theory. But yeah, he was quite critical of nation states because he viewed them as hierarchical systems that were oftentimes captured by the capitalist class and then utilized by them to further their own interests, which almost always came, at least according to Marx, to the detriment of everyone else. So he would have been critical of nation states, certainly. He was quite critical of nation states in virtue of them being hierarchical systems.
People are commenting on your cat.
Oh, yeah. He's a lonely, lonely boy. All right. From Ahmed Khan for $1.99 says, smuggling of genes into the USSR?
What?
Ahmed Khan says for $1.99, smuggling of genes into the USSR?
Like genes, G-E-N-E, or genes, J-E?
J.
I don't, what's his point? He's asked. I don't know what he's gonna have to send something else to clarify. I'm not understanding if that's for me. I'm assuming it is. I don't, yeah. The Soviet Union had no genes, there were no genes at all during the USSR. Nope, nobody had genes, apparently. I don't know what
it's a conspiracy. This is the real reason why Ukraine's being invaded right now.
Stop the import. Hashtag stop the import of genes. Nobody likes to get rid of Wrangler.
Misinformation. Okay, from Sphincter of Doom for $5 says, unfortunately, the geography of Africa is not as conducive to trade or transport as Europe or the American continent.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that history shows that's obviously false. There was massive amounts of trade into and out of Africa during the 1560 and 1700. That's just a historical fact. I don't think it has anything to do with geography. I think it has to do with more socioeconomic culture rather than geographic culture.
All right, from Medical Mastery for $4.99 says, T-Jump, stick to politics and philosophy, not science. Materialism is dumb, so is communism.
Pay me.
Agree with you. From Brandon Hansen for $9.99 says, Marx is a Malthusian, but just flipped the hierarchy structure. Also, he sucks.
Yeah, I don't know what.
He wasn't done. I'm sorry. Also, he sucks. Alexander Hamilton, Henry Clay, Friedrich List, all are the real ones you need to know about.
I know a little bit about them. But with respect to what he said to Marx, with the first thing, I genuinely don't know what that means. With respect to Marx is dumb. Okay, sure, you can think that. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with people thinking that Marx was dumb. There's probably more people to think that he was than that he wasn't.
Apparently he sucks a lot. So that is all the super chats at the list, and we will go back to the unpaid questions now. So if you have a super chat, send it in, and they will go straight to the top of the list. We will ask them next. Did I read this already? Yes, I did. From Darth Revan asks to the Marxist, are you suggesting we go back to tribal clan times? What logical sense does that make?
I don't recall saying or even insinuating that at any point what I said or at any point in this discussion. I think what I said was that societies prior to about 10 to 12,000 years ago, that's how they were. I don't think I said anything about that means we should go back to that. I don't want to wear nasty ass, very, very poorly made clothing. It's largely like fiber and mud that's just slapped onto my skin. Like, no, I don't understand this, asking questions that don't even have anything even remotely to do with what the person is arguing.
Okay, let me just check to see. It looks like that's all the questions we have. Last call for alcohol. Get them while it's hot.
I know. So there was a question, another question from Germania for T-Jump. Would you mind if I read that since I've got it right here?
No. By all means, please.
He said, question for T-Jump. Is there at least one facet of Marxism that you would agree with or appreciate?
Not sure how to answer that. I mean, I guess so. There's lots of different platitudes in it that are just truisms that I agree with because they're truisms. I mean, it's definitely not the most wrong system. It's like gets many things right.
Okay. I did see another question just came in. Let me see if I can. Question for T-Jump. Is there at least one? Oh, you just read that. Sorry. Man. Way behind. Okay. Well, I guess
we're going to wrap it up. Yeah, Germania likes to fuck with people. That's why you should never read his question.
Never read his questions again. Germania.
You know, no. I love you, Ger.
No, we're done. Okay. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up, folks. Before we go, I would just like to thank the moderators in the chat. I want to thank James for creating this platform. Thank you, everyone in the audience, for joining us tonight and for elevating the conversation with your super chats and your questions. Thank you to the debaters. You guys are the lifeblood of the show. Thank you for joining us here tonight and for sharing your ideas. And for everybody that's out there tonight, like it if you loved it, share it if you want to spread it, and subscribe because we have plenty more debates coming your way. You don't want to miss. Our speakers are linked in the description below. Check them out. Do it now. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great night. And remember to keep sifting out the reasonable from the unreasonable. Have a great night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.